Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 15. He's back. Yes, the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska abandoned us last week. He had no time because he was, well, he was one of those doctors without borders or something like that. He was a humanitarian on a mission. Welcome back to the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, a podcast that, well, as we learned last week, can't take place unless the doctor is in the house, and tonight he's back in the house as he was in Central America last week. Is that exactly?
Yeah, Guatemala.
Guatemala. Now, this was a Doctors Without Borders program, right?
Now, not technically Doctors Without Borders, okay. But same kind of concept. So it was a medical humanitarian trip. I was with a group called Operation Walk.
Okay.
And we went down there and did hip and knee replacements on, I think, in 3 days, 3.5 days of surgery. I think we did hip and knee replacements on 70 patients.
70 hip and knee replacements? Now, did you have
to... It was actually more than that because a few of the patients we did, we would do both knees or both hips. So it was probably about, I think we did around some... Right around 74, 75 total joint replacements in 3.5 days.
So when you're in Guatemala, do you got to follow the same rules you do here? Like go in and sit down with each patient. Hey, are you allergic to this? Are you allergic to that?
We try to.
Okay.
I mean, we try to do everything you do to the kind of the highest standards of medical care. Consent, make sure they know what all the risks and benefits are, things like that. And there's a little bit of a language barrier, but we had a lot of Spanish speakers with us. I've got some very rudimentary medical Spanish. I mean, I can kind of muddle my way through it. It's not pretty, but sometimes kind of a high incidence of rheumatoid arthritis in the indigenous populations down there. So you have a lot of people of literally it's a large group of Mayans and that they don't all speak Spanish. I mean, they're still speaking a lot of these indigenous Mayan dialects,
really?
And languages and dialects of that language.
Hey, don't forget the Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy, and the Remington Trophy celebration is coming up on January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. This is an event you do not want to miss. 6:30 p.m. cocktail hour, 7:30 p.m. for the dinner and program. Still time to get your table, still time to get your tickets, because you will not want to miss what we think is the best awards program around. Listen, nothing against the Allen Trophy celebration. I'm just saying the Remington Trophy does it better and does it a lot better, because not only do you get the Remington Trophy winner, you get the Ford Legends Award winner. And this year, that is Lieutenant General Robert Caslin Jr., the 59th Superintendent of the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. I noticed last week, and I don't know if you noticed it, as I'm going to cough, that Dave was at West Point.
I saw him posting about it.
Yeah, I don't think he knew at the time that they pulled the prank on the Falcon and they almost killed the Air Force bird. Did you read that story?
I did. Sorry, I didn't answer him. Drinking Travis's soup.
We'll explain the soup
in a little
bit. And
that's not a euphemism, by the way.
No, it's not. We'll explain the soup in a little bit. Yes,
I did see that.
Yeah, so Dave was at West Point checking out the Air Force game. But again, Lieutenant General Robert Caslin Jr., the 59th Superintendent of the U.S. Military Academy, will be the Ford Legends Award winner. He's going to give a great speech. You just know he's going to give a great speech at the Remington Trophy presentation. And don't forget this year's entertainment, Frank Caliendo. You know, in the past, we've had a singer. We've had some comedians that were...
Okay.
They usually
do a pretty good job.
They do their corporate gig show, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's pretty straight-laced. It's kind of blah. It's politically correct, and there's no swearing or anything. But Caliendo, everybody knows who Caliendo is. Everybody knows those impersonations. And Frank Caliendo is generally a funny guy. So if you want to see Frank Caliendo, you want to see a bunch of former Huskers, a bunch of former NFL stars, and just have a great night, great food, then you want to go to the Remington Trophy presentation. Go to remingtontrophy.com. That's remingtontrophy.com for ticket and table information. You heard Rob say he's drinking my wife's soup. Well, it's a perfect night to be drinking soup out, and he is literally drinking out of like a big glass mug or pottery
this
mug.
This is like the greatest mug of all time.
She made a squash soup tonight. It has a little cayenne pepper in it.
Oh, it's delicious.
And so when you think of soup, you think of winter, you think of the holidays, which leads us right into our Infusion Brewing Company beer tonight, which is Dean's Holiday Spiced Ale. This is a 5.8 ABV with a 25 IBU. Now, when you think of spiced ale, Rob, you had a great analogy for what a spiced ale is in your mind.
Oh, I said I thought it was like some drinking fermented potpourri is usually how these holiday spiced ales come out. What did you – you said it's like fermented fruitcake.
Well, no, I said sometimes you think of a fermented fruitcake, but that's not –
No, that's not what this is. They did a nice job of backing off the spice. I mean, usually they're dumping coriander and orange and all sorts of stuff in here. And
I think it's just cinnamon. Maybe a little nutmeg in there?
But there's not much. There's just enough that you know it's got that spice in there, but it's not a lot.
You know, I was talking to Danielle from Infusion Brewing Company the other day, and she just texted me. She says, hey, you guys are doing an amazing job. It's amazing how many people come up to the Benson location or out to the Southwest Omaha location and say they listen to the podcast. They really want Loose Morals. They still haven't done Loose Morals. People still going in and requesting the loose Morals. But we appreciate everybody who's been drinking the Infusion Company beer. When you go to Infusion Brewing Company, whether it's the Benson location or the Southwest Omaha location, make sure to tell them you heard about Infusion Brewing Company on the Husker Doc Talk podcast because, well, we want everybody to support our sponsors, and sponsors like to hear good things, especially when they hear it that it came from the podcast.
Frankly, it's pretty damn good beer.
It is really, really good. But in this, you're so right. It's like they just stopped at the right time of brewing this. I mean, it's not too strong.
It's really not. I mean, it's a great ale. I like it a lot.
For more information.
It goes well with your wife's soup.
Yes, it does, which is a squash soup. I didn't have any soup because I don't like squash.
You're missing out, dude.
I heard that. She put a lot of cayenne pepper in there, a lot of butter.
It's got some fire, got some dairy in there. It's great.
There you go. For more information on the beers and all the beers at Infusion Brewing Company, go to infusionbrewing.com. That's infusionbrewing.com. All right, Rob, you've been saying it, you've been preaching it, and for the last 3-4 weeks that a Nebraska offense is starting to wreak havoc on opposing coaches, and I think you saw it out of Urban Meyer as Nebraska gave Ohio State about everything it could handle last Saturday.
They should have won the damn game. You know, the players have voiced a lot of frustration over this loss. I don't think I've seen this much just flat out angry with themselves after this loss. I think there was embarrassment after the Michigan loss.
Mm-hmm.
They were pissed because they felt they should have won and they felt like they gave the game away. They won the turnover battle. I saw some reversion to some earlier in the season slop. And I mean that in the sense of decision making, execution. Those were the two areas. It killed you. You had the kind of the backwards pitch pass that Martinez had. They were in the red zone looking to get another score. I think if that play doesn't happen, I think Nebraska puts up another touchdown. I think that would have put them up 28-16 at that point.
So do you think, and I'm just asking quite frankly here, do you think Nebraska is getting better? Or is it a little bit of Ohio State isn't as good as we all thought, or a combination of both?
I don't think Ohio State's as good as
everybody thought.
Yeah, now I say that too. I still think they're probably somewhere in that 6th through 15th range in the country. From a talent standpoint, that's where they're at. I don't know if they've consistently put that together yet. I think they're still trying to find the Tom Herman as offensive coordinator magic that they had back when they won the national title.
You mean Wilson's not cutting it?
He's doing okay. I mean, I like him.
But I think that more of their problems are defensively.
Has not been as great a defense form this year as it has been in past years. Losing Bosa hurt. I mean, that guy's he's going to be like his brother. He's going to be a starter in the NFL. And that I think losing that hurts. But it's not as strong of a defense. Now, I think Schiano's a pretty darn good defensive coordinator. I really do. I think Jim Leonard's a good defensive coordinator. I keep bringing those guys up because those were the two guys where when the camera panned the sideline, you had that, oh, my God, I just don't want to have to deal with this offense after today look on their face.
What did Urban Meyer say? That they're the best two-win team in the country? Or this is a two-win team that nobody wants to play?
We've heard that from more than a few coaches. And I think it's true. I hate moral victories. I hate looking at the progress that this team is making and how good they are and how close they are. But this is a team. The difference is that I look back to Bo Pelini's last season in Lincoln, and it was a 9-win season.
It was.
But there was a lot of games you looked at and went, oh, my God, this game could have gone the other way. That's a team that's kind of riding that edge.
Iowa fans are feeling that right now.
Hold on. We'll get there. That's a whole nother topic. We'll get there in a second. Mike Riley's first year in Lincoln, they lost a lot of those close games, and I sat there thinking, okay, well, I don't know if we even talked about this in the podcast, Riley's first year. I can't believe that was back in 2015, but we talked about the fact that, yeah, you know what, it's not this season, 2015, is not a lot different than 2014. You're playing the on the field product was pretty similar. It's just you got a few balls bounce your way in 14 that you didn't get in 15. So in 15 you lost those games. I think 2016 there was a lot of smoke and mirrors. They won 9 games. But again, there was a lot of close losses. They had trouble with the really good teams other than Michigan State. And then it all unraveled in 2017, and I think you kind of saw the true colors of what happens to a program after 3 years of Mike Riley at the helm. So the point I guess I'm making is you look at the 2014 team, the 2015 team, those were teams that had a lot of close games. Sometimes you win those, sometimes you lose those. And the hope would be that you'd be able to look at those games and say, okay, there's an upshot here. There's a ceiling here. There's room for improvement, for progress here. And in 2014, I kind of had trouble finding, okay, well, man, we just didn't really have the coaching and the horses to get to where you wanted to go. I mean, was Tommy Armstrong really going to take you that far without help from running back and wide receivers? Or the offensive line, a better defense. You look at the 2015 team, man, was there place for a lot of improvement there? Again, you had Tommy Armstrong at quarterback, but you knew Mike Riley and Langsdorf wanted to run a pro-style passing offense, so you knew until Armstrong graduated, you weren't going to see a system on offense that really fit what these coaches know. And that was still 2 years out from 2015. So again, you didn't see that room for improvement, that high ceiling. I look at the team down in Lincoln right now, and they're losing these close games. They're a team that's kind of right on that edge again. But I'm sitting here going, oh my God, there's a really high ceiling here for this team. There's so many places that another season under their belt, I really think you're going to see a lot of improvement. You're going to see better strength coaching, better conditioning on the offense and defensive lines. You're going to see better talent coming in at those places where there's holes in talent. Both lines, defensive backfield. Those are places where you're going to see a lot of improvement here with last spring's recruiting class and this coming spring's recruiting class. A better understanding of the offense, a better understanding of the defense, with key players that are returning at wide receiver, running back, quarterback, offensive line, tight end. There's so many guys coming back that are going to be key components for the next 2, even 3 years on this team right now. And so they're sitting on that edge, but unlike some of those other years where Nebraska's had a bubble team, an edge team, I see the room for improvement, and I think that's why everybody's so damn optimistic and people are we're okay settling for the ever hated moral victories.
Well, are they really hated though? I think they're getting hated by Scott Frost and players because, well, they're competitors. And if you don't accept a moral victory, that's a good thing. But I see a fan base that is more than willing to accept a moral victory here.
I think they're willing to accept this season with moral victories because they know how far we were away from on the field success.
So would those moral victories be more acceptable now because just the way the season started? I mean, if the season maybe would have started differently, you like don't accept moral 5 victories.
5-0, for instance.
Yes.
Let's say we play Akron and we start 5-0 and we go up to Michigan and maybe lose, but they got a lot of confidence and they don't get blown out. That flies in the face of the moral victories. If they go 5-0, let's say they still get beat at Michigan, I still think they've got enough mindset and ability to come back and hold off Northwestern. You beat Bethune-Cookman,
Northwestern's leading the West right now.
They
played Notre Dame.
Hey, who's Iowa got next?
Iowa has Northwestern next. So, which would be interesting. We have to get into this whole Iowa discussion and me doing this podcast and me doing the Iowa call-in show.
I think it's interesting only because, not so much you necessarily, I just think it's an interesting story because 2-3 weeks ago we were sitting here going, the West Division runs through Iowa City.
Okay, so here it is. So last week, 2 weeks ago, it was before you went, right after we cut the last podcast, I get an email from a guy in South Dakota on the Husker Doc Talk email account who thinks those emails go to you, but they actually go to me because I'm your middleman. And he's like, Rob, you've got to stop doing this podcast with a Hawkeye fan. This is not a Husker podcast if a Hawkeye fan is hosting it. So I wrote him back. I'm like, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to stop doing the podcast, and I don't think Rob wants to do it by himself.
Not really.
So then this weekend, I'm hosting the Iowa Hawkeye call-in show on News Radio 1040 WHO, and I've been doing it for 6 years, and you know how much I love doing that show. And late in the game, somebody calls up and says, we can't have a Hawkeye show hosted by Husker. I said, what are you talking about? And I'm going to get in trouble for this. But I was like, fuck! I was mad because because then they go, well, you know, your original Twitter account was Husker Hawkeye. What people don't I need to explain this to both.
Yeah, but you were the Hawkeye.
That was the point. That's what people don't understand. So the guy in South Dakota, I need to explain something. You probably don't know the history of Rob and myself, and I don't think a lot of Iowa fans do either. Rob and I have worked together and had a professional broadcast career together since
over a decade.
Almost 15 years. I think you took over Sound Off in 2003.
Probably right around there.
And so Rob and I hosted this, and we've had great chemistry. We have this great stuff together. So when I got out of television, I started this thing. I thought, I'd get into the website thing. Rob would be the Husker. I would be the Hawkeye. We'd call it Husker Hawkeye, and we'd play off one another. And it was a lot of fun. We did some video work, but it was hard to sustain. And out of nowhere, Dave Remington says, hey, I like you guys together. Will you guys do a podcast? And I thought, you know what? Let's make it all about Rob and make it the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Because I was starting to do my show in Des Moines. And then I got the Iowa Hawkeye call-in show. And now I get berated by everybody. Hawkeye fans who don't know me think that I'm a Husker fan. Husker fans listen to this and go, you're a Hawkeye fan. Well, I am a Hawkeye fan. I've never hid behind that.
And even better, the Cyclone fans think you hate the Cyclones.
I know. And I'm the only one who, right after they beat West Virginia, said, well, I think Iowa State's going to play in the Big 12 title game. And if they win out, I think they will.
And they were insulted by it.
I can't win with anybody. This takes me back to when, and you'll remember this, when I was picking on Bill Callahan and I was picking on Steve Peterson, every Husker fan hated me until I turned out to be right in that whole situation.
Now then as soon as everybody found out Callahan really sucks, they actually kind of liked you a bit.
Just a little bit. A
little bit.
But yeah, this has been a rough week and a half for me. So it's very weird because I don't know. It's just I got South Dakota guys mad at me who don't want me to host the show with you. I've got Iowa fans mad at me, and now Iowa loses to Purdue. And here's a team
which
I thought was
Purdue's a pretty good team. I think when you look at Purdue's body of work, I think the fluke that sticks out right now is the Michigan State game
or the Eastern Michigan game.
I'll give you that. Early in the year, I think they look past them.
It's an Eastern Michigan?
I know.
They lost their first three games by a combined 8 points. Think about that.
Purdue did?
Yes.
Yeah.
Northwestern, Eastern Michigan, Missouri. Now, Missouri just turned around and beat Florida, so that loss doesn't look
Missouri
too bad.
Should have beat Kentucky, too.
But, yeah, so it's the big question is, you know, and it's setting up, because I think here's what's happening. And I think why Iowa fans are getting a little cinched up, and rightfully so, right? I mean, this team was supposed to be 10-2, 9-3, but what we have here is we have the best thing for the rivalry, the Heroes game, which I hate the made up Heroes game because I think it could be something better.
I didn't even realize there was a trophy for the Nebraska Wisconsin game.
I didn't know that.
There was. I had no idea. The camera panned to it on the sideline. And the reason nobody knows about it is, one, it's one of these manufactured trophies, so nobody gives a rat's ass about those. But the other thing is, it's sat in a box for 7 years.
Good, right?
Nobody's taken it out of the box because Wisconsin doesn't care, and so it sat in a storeroom on the University of Wisconsin campus. Anyway,
here's what I think we got happening here. We got Nebraska's fans are getting... They see the progress, and I think that, and we got a question. I think it was from Michael. Michael says, after the 5-point loss to Ohio State, how winnable are the Huskers' next three games? And I think they're very winnable.
As winnable as every loss Nebraska's had, with the exception of Michigan, which is damn winnable.
And I think I see confidence growing at Nebraska, and I see confidence deflating at Iowa because. This team was supposed to be 10-2. It was supposed to be 9-3. Now it's vulnerable, and then they got Illinois, Northwestern, and Nebraska left. And I think a lot of Iowa fans see Nebraska getting better, going, "Crap, that's going to be a harder game than they imagined." Which I deep down is good for the rivalry.
I think this was an automatic chalk up win for the Hawkeyes.
I would agree.
At one point, especially being in Iowa City, and I think that's the way fans on both sides kind of looked at. Now all of a sudden.
I know.
Man, I'm looking, you know, I tweeted this, might have been today, actually. Iowa could go 1-2 in these last three games. That is not out of the realm of
possibility.
Could
they go 1-2 or could they go 0-3? I don't think they lose to Illinois.
I don't think they do either.
No, but they need a win, and you're right. I mean, if Iowa ends up 7-5.
Which, if they go 1-2, they'll be 7-5.
Yeah. You're going to have a pretty upset fan base. And let me tell you why. Nebraska fans can be a little insufferable, right? I'm not going to lie here.
Oh, heck yeah. I'm one of them.
So, but I think what happens is, you know, I think most Iowa fans are content with the 7-8 wins, occasionally get the 9-10. I really do. I think they like the consistency during the last 20 years of Kirk Ferentz. The program's never been embarrassed. On the field, except for those 1999-2000 when they got blown out. But for the most part, never embarrassed. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
Never really in trouble or even anything like that.
Kirk Ferentz tends to not cover up wife beatings by his assistant coaches. So you don't have those kind of issues.
I think the majority of fans, and I waffle here, are okay with that. But what happens is, 3 years ago, you go 12-2. And 12-0 in the regular season before you get to the Big Ten title game, you're talking.
They went twelve and two.
But before you get to the Big Ten title game, and I started with 12-2. Give me that.
I'll give you that.
you get talked about in the national title race. You get talked about in the college football playoffs. You're in that top four, and then you kind of like that, right? I mean, that's.
I think 2015. I think it stung. For Iowa fans, to the extent that I think a lot of Iowa fans don't want to deal with that again. I think Iowa fans want to go 8-10 wins, beat Nebraska, go out of the Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa State rivalries. They want to go at least 2-1 in those.
That's it.
And if they get that, they're pretty happy.
You know what? I can't argue with you that much. I really can't. I can't argue with
you.
Yeah,
I think that's what
they
want.
I've been around it a long time.
I think because I've got a lot of friends, people I work with who are pretty hardcore Iowa fans. And I remember after that Michigan State loss, I remember one of them telling me, you know, most of us are pretty happy we lost. We really wanted to just go to the Rose Bowl.
They did. That was the most bizarre thing in the world to me. I mean, if you win, you go to the college football playoff, but they were more content. And they were more content with going to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here going, yeah, that just doesn't
make sense.
Doesn't compute for me.
And that's where the fan base, and this is why I think a lot of Iowa fans get mad at me.
You'd rather not have a Big Ten champion. Like, you'd rather lose the Big Ten championship.
And go to the Rose Bowl.
If you can go to the Rose Bowl.
And this is why Iowa fans get mad at me, though, because.
But I think that was I think that was denial, dude.
Maybe so. Because it justifies it. But that's why Iowa fans get mad at me. And they say, well, you're not a real fan because I question that mentality. I do. I'm like, if you have one of the highest paid coaches in the country and one of the largest athletic budgets, which is it's fairly large, it's top 12, I believe, in the country.
Kirk Ferentz would have been fired at Iowa at this point.
Yeah, at Nebraska, you mean?
I'm sorry. Correct. If Kirk Ferentz was at Nebraska and he's punching out a couple of these 7-8 win seasons in a row, I think he gets fired.
Well, it's is that what he would be fired at any program? Besides Iowa, and I only say that, and by the way, I'm a huge Kirk Ferentz fan. I really am. I think, I mean, Rob, you're an offensive lineman. Who prepares offensive linemen for the NFL?
I actually am a big fan of Kirk Ferentz, and I think what he's done, Iowa's a lot like Nebraska in that they're one of those programs that should not be very good. And when a program...
Now, Nebraska fan's going to go, what do you mean by that?
Land-grant university, smaller university, rural state... smaller metropolitan areas, hard to recruit to, northern climate. It's hard to get recruits to come here. It's hard to get a lot of fanfare. You look at a place like Nebraska, a place like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa. Minnesota is one of those schools that I think, out of those ones I named, you got Minneapolis. That's a great city. So seriously, Minnesota's the school that actually should be leading the pack out of that group.
Yeah, but I always find it interesting that universities in large metropolitan cities with pro teams have a hard time succeeding.
Yeah, I think they do. There's stuff that just becomes well, I think the other things going on, here's the way I phrase it. It distracts from the culture of the program.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is when you look at Nebraska, I'd be the first to admit it's all we've got. I mean, I've got an in-law who even says it's like, God, you guys, it's like a cult down there. And it is. But it's because it's all we've got. There's nothing to distract from it. And so you put a huge amount of emphasis. So fans want to see winning. Fans want to see the teams do well. You look at Wisconsin, same kind of thing. Wisconsin fans want their teams to do well. They want to see good volleyball teams, good basketball teams.
Good hockey teams.
Good hockey, good football. They want those sports teams at their university to play very good. That was horrible grammar. To put a very good product out on the field of play.
You know, before Barry Alvarez showed up in Madison, hockey was a bigger sport than football.
It was. It really was. And it's just, but that's the thing for those schools is that if you don't have something to distract, I think that's one of the problems that just killed KU football is that one, KU basketball is sort of it's in the fiber of the people down there. It's the culture down there. And when it comes to football, Chiefs.
Think about this. My son goes to KU, and he was at the football game last week when they played Iowa State. There was 15,000 announced. 15,000 announced at the football game. He was at an exhibition basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse when they played Washburn, and there were 16,500. Legit.
That's awesome. An exhibition basketball game against Washburn draws more people than the Division I football game.
Yes.
Against a pretty good Iowa State team.
A decent Iowa State team. Up next for the Huskers is going to be Illinois.
They're ranked ahead of Iowa.
Who's that?
Cyclones.
Who won the game?
I didn't say you won. I just said
I'm
they're
just
ranked.
Saying, I'm just saying they're Iowa
ranked
beat them
ahead. I'm just saying they're ranked ahead of the Hawkeyes.
I'm just saying Iowa beat them. Anyway, Nebraska takes on Illinois this weekend. Illinois coming off a win, but Nebraska going to be a favorite, and I think a big favorite at home. Who did Illinois beat last week?
Yeah, Minnesota. Smoked them.
Yeah, you see Minnesota fired its defensive coordinator today?
I did. But I think P.J. Fleck, if he doesn't – he's got to have – I think he's going to be Minnesota's Mike Riley. I think he's got to have some measurable progress in year three, or I think he gets booted out of there.
Well, because you can only row the boat so much, right? You can only believe –
it's shtick.
It is shtick.
There's a lot of shtick there, not a lot of substance.
But you yourself said Minnesota should be successful. I mean, and you
they should be. I think they really should. I mean, it wasn't until I think they had some success when Glenn Mason went up there. It just didn't last that long up there. But Minnesota's a school that I think they've got some resources. They've got some. I think they've got some better environment for recruits to be brought into than a lot of these other Midwestern, upper Midwestern schools. I mean, really? Madison, Wisconsin? It's a great campus, actually. But
how long does Lovie Smith last at Illinois? I mean, they beat Kent. They beat Western Illinois. They beat Rutgers. And they've beaten Minnesota. I guess that's an improvement, but let's be honest. That he's not winning the games he needs to win. He's not competing in the games he needs to compete in. He got beat by Maryland 60-30. Got beat by Wisconsin 49-20. I mean, is Lovie Smith going to last at Illinois?
I could see him just the name recognition, his tenure with the Bears. I could see that keeping him around for 4 or 5 years. This is what, his third year?
This is year three. Starting to look like Papa Smurf, man. He's got that gray beard.
Yeah, I think he goes 5, and if you don't see much improvement, he's gone after that. So,
but why do you give a guy like Lovie Smith 5 years? And Dave,
because he's Lovie Smith.
Is that the only reason why?
That's
and
it.
Remember, when that athletic director was hired, he immediately fired the football coach. After I believe he got like a 2-year extension because it was on an interim basis, and took him to a bowl game and brought in Lovie Smith. So
yeah, they were actually doing
decent.
Okay.
Yeah, they were improving.
I highly questioned that move at the time. It seemed like very much like a Steve Peterson. I'm going to bring in my guy, some big name guy, some former NFL guy, and it's going to be the flashiest hire of all time. And at the time, I thought it was a mistake. And it wasn't because I had anything against Lovie Smith. Actually, I think Lovie Smith's a hell of an NFL coach. I just don't think NFL coaching necessarily translates to college, vice versa.
And I don't disagree with you on that. If you were to look at the Big Ten right now, best team in the Big Ten?
Well, I think Michigan.
Hands down?
Oh, easily.
What they did to Penn State last week was...
That was brutal.
That was a beatdown.
There was a... You know, I kind of retweeted a tweet that first kind of got brought to my attention by Michael Severe, because he's my new best friend.
I know that. You even did. you go on humanitarian trips, do his show, but don't do a podcast.
That's because the only time I had Wi-Fi for Skype to work was at 3 a.m. when he Skyped me.
I get no love.
I love you.
No, you don't.
No. I wouldn't sit in your basement and drink beer and drink your wife's soup if I didn't love you.
My wife makes good soup.
Oh, it's so freaking good. That cayenne is awesome. I'm going to be warm till about 3 a.m.
I think we're going to do a holiday soup supper again.
Oh, I would come to that and bring soup.
Excellent.
Or maybe I just bring lots of beer and drink the soup. Anyway, you know, the article is by one of the Penn State beat writers. If you follow Doc Talk Sports on Twitter, you can find it. He talks about the fact that, yeah, Joe Moorhead at Penn State for a few years as the offensive coordinator. And things just click. Now, you had Saquon Barkley. You had a number of other really, really good NFL caliber players there. But it was also one of those situations where the moment Joe Moorhead left, and I think he's head coach at Mississippi State now.
I think so, yes.
I think Mississippi State. It just seems like Penn State's offense, in a lot of just general attitude, has fallen off. From a swagger, confidence, even that seems to be lacking a little bit. That you wonder how much was Joe Moorhead and how much was James Franklin from a success standpoint. Now, I still think Franklin's a pretty good coach, and I think he's a hell of a recruiter. I think he's got some amazing athletes there.
Yeah, but
still.
Remember, he was on a hot seat last year until they got...
They had kind of a rough
start, and then they went on a run.
They went on a hell of a run.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how Penn State does remainder of this season and into next year, because I think they lose Trace McSorley after this season, correct? I think he's a senior this year. They're relying heavily on him, and that didn't help at all in that game against Michigan. But I think right now Michigan is an outstanding football team. They're playing better than what they showed in that opener against Notre Dame.
And if Michigan, but here's the worrisome part of me that I see here is that if Michigan were to lose to Ohio State, and the way Ohio State's been losing, I don't think the Big Ten gets representation in the college football playoff poll.
I would agree.
I could see the Big Ten.
Because that would be a two-loss Michigan team at that point. Now, you had a two-loss Ohio State team a few years ago. But those losses came earlier in the year.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if the college football playoff committee is forgiving to Ohio State and to Urban Meyer, who now has brain cysts or whatever, and is setting up for.
I don't know.
For the doc.
I think it's not. I think it's a platform for him to
retire, step down, move along here. Nothing to see.
Oh, I would not be surprised if he stepped down. But between the. But between the assistant coach wife-beating scandal, I think pressure gets to him after a while. I think it gets to anybody.
Yeah.
But you even look at Nick Saban. I think Saban figured out a way to deal with it. But a few years ago, when Mac Brown got let go at Texas, I mean, there were emails published Saban telling his agent, hey, go look into this.
You always got to look. Got to see what's on the other side.
And a lot of it was related back to the pressure of dealing with the fact that he goes 12-1, 11-2, and does not win a national title, and the fans are up in arms about it.
You know, looking at the Big Ten right now, I don't think there's going to be a lot of turnover in the coaching ranks. Maryland, I hope Canada gets that job on a full-time basis. I think he's earned it. He inherited a shit show from Durkin,
and
has gone 3-3 in the Big Ten, 5-4 overall. Just needs one more win to become bowl eligible. Chris Ash, I don't know if he gets fired at Rutgers or not. He should, because Rutgers is the worst team in the country, but the buyout is huge for Ash. So, I mean, I don't know if having one of your players picked up
is this
for
his
third year?
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I think the buyout's like $22 million. That's a lot of money.
And I don't know if Rutgers has they've got a great alumni base. I don't think they've got the sports interested money alumni base to do that kind of buyout.
And I don't see any movement on the West. So you're looking, if Canada gets the job at Maryland, that's kind of a wash. You're just promoting. I don't know if Ash gets fired or not. But sometimes you don't have a choice but to fire somebody.
Yeah, and I don't think there's... You can negotiate a buyout down.
You're right.
Too, so,
or you can just say we're going to do it over X amount of years.
Yeah.
So
they'll figure out a way to do it if they want to do it. I do think flex a little bit on the hot seat. When you see guys changing, when you see guys firing assistants 2/3 of the way through the season.
Well, here's a name you'll remember. Remember Bryce Pop?
Yeah.
Okay, Bryce Pop was
Northern Iowa.
Northern Iowa guy.
Heck of a defense.
Played for the Bills.
Yep.
Left Northern Iowa to go coach with PJ Fleck at Minnesota. Mysteriously quit like in July. And rumor has it that he just thought PJ Fleck, and this is rumor, innuendo, no fact behind it, but the rumor is that he just thought he was a whack job.
I played against Bryce Pop. One, hell of a football player, kicked my ass. Two, very level-headed guy.
So if a level-headed guy is leaving a D1 job to go, you know what, I don't want any part of this.
It does kind of make you wonder.
It kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Just a tiny little bit.
Yeah, the first time I saw Fleck running up and down the sideline, I was like, this guy's... It's all shtick. There's not a lot of substance here.
Before we jump into the listener emails for tonight, I do want to remind you that, you know, when you go to Nebraska football games, Nebraska basketball games, or any Nebraska event, or hell, if you go to the airport, you can see most fans still dressed as Husker fans year-round. You go to Husker Hounds to get all your Husker gear. We had Scareway Cancer 2 weeks ago, Rob.
They're not selling costumes now, are they?
No. But, you know, Scotty really helped Scareway Cancer out because... we had a Scott Frost and Tom Osborne signed football.
Nice.
I was able to go to Husker Hounds and locate a nice case for that football. I was able to get a Scott Frost commemorative coin. I was also able to get the World Herald book about Scott Frost coming home. And that package sold for almost $1,200. And it helped out, and Scotty's just been a great supporter, not only the podcast, but of Scareway Cancer, and that's why we want you to support Scotty at Husker Hounds. Three locations, including the Mega Superstore at 84th and Center. Get in, see him. If you have anything you want to wear, it's red. You can find it at Husker Hounds. And, of course, if you want to go to the game, remember, no game is ever sold out with Ticket Express. Chad, Jessica, and the whole crew at Ticket Express, they can get you to any event. Doesn't have to be a Nebraska event. If you need to go see Ozzy Osbourne in Des Moines, yes, Ozzy's going to play Des Moines, believe it or not, where he actually got arrested.
Kiss has the tour coming up.
Oh, again? They're touring again?
It's the last one.
No, it's not. They've been touring for like 30 years on a farewell tour.
40, actually.
Okay, but it's
not. Well, it hasn't been a farewell.
Yeah, they've had a farewell tour for as long as I can remember. And for as long as I remember, Ticket Express has been the one to get you into those concerts, get you into those games. Go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. Don't forget, you can also get parking passes, end club passes, club lounge passes, you name it. Chad has it at TicketExpress.com. And if you found the Husker Doc Talk podcast, more than likely you found it at Husker Max 24/7, 365. Husker Max is the official source for Husker news 24 hours a day. And we do thank them for being the distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. This is actually a question from Brad before the Ohio State game. So this is actually before, because you missed last week. Rob, help me understand Nebraska's special teams. How much is it? Is it practice emphasized during the week? It's hard. Is it that hard to coach and or play? That's from Brad.
I think special teams, it's one of the hardest areas, A, to get players motivated. And there's 100 theories behind it. Some coaches are like, hey, let's get the up-and-comers, the guys trying to make a name for themselves. Some coaches are, no, I'm going to put my best talent out there. It's all over the place in that regard. So you've kind of got to develop a philosophy, I think, and stick with it, whichever one it is. I think Nebraska's been trying to find itself a little bit from a kicking standpoint. You lost a four-year starter in Drew Brown at kicker. That's tough to do. I think they're still developing. Oh, I just absolutely blanked on it. Young kid, true freshman out of Alabama. But anyway, he's doing okay. You had Caleb Lightbourne, who lost the punting job to Isaac Armstrong. I think Armstrong's done a really nice job punting. He really has. I think Lightbourne's pressing a little bit. He's a really good athlete. From an athletic standpoint, he's one of the most athletic kickers Nebraska's had in years. But I think he's lost the punting job. I think he's pressing a little bit. He had the flubbed kickoff. I still think that was a botched, intentional onside kick. Now, everybody's seen it, and if you look at it in slow motion, if you look at the way he plants his plant foot And if you look at the way he brings the kicking foot across, it completely looks like he's trying to onside kick it. He just
whiffs it.
Just whiffed it. Kicked it backwards.
Adam says, "Hey, Dr. Rob, I've been watching football all my life, but I've never paid too much attention to the offensive and defensive line play. Rob, what are a couple good things and a couple bad things a newbie like me could look to assess how well the line is performing?" That's from Adam.
Okay, a couple of things. And here's the things I look at. I'm always looking on run plays for push. Are you getting low? Are you matching up with your guys? Are you not letting guys stunt past you? And are you getting that push? Are you pushing guys up the field? Doesn't have to be a lot. If an offensive lineman can drive a defensive lineman backwards yard, yard and a half, that's a major victory. You're going to open up some serious holes. The other place I look at is to see what the tackles are doing, both on run plays in terms of getting that push, getting the defensive ends out of there. And then the other thing I look at is how are the offensive tackles doing on pass protection? Are they giving up too much ground? I've been a rather harsh critic of Farniok. I thought he played one of his better games this year against Ohio State. Actually, Brendan Hymus, who's been really solid the last 4 to 5 weeks. Hymus, once in a while, he can be really susceptible to a bull rush. And he got bull rushed right back into Martinez in the first half of the game on Saturday against Ohio State. So I was a little critical of Hymus for that. But otherwise, I thought Hymus played a pretty solid game. But those are the things I look for. I want to see the push on those running plays. I want to see guys driving defensive linemen off the ball, getting that push. And then the other place that's easy to look is watch the tackles on pass protection, because that's where you see an offensive lineman that's really kind of on an island by themselves. And if they can match up with the defensive end fairly well, you're doing pretty good.
So if you're going to assess the defensive line, almost the opposite is true, right? If you're not getting pushed out, if you're pushing the other way.
Exactly. Are you getting that rush on the quarterback from the defensive ends, the outside spots? And then the other thing is that ability to hold your ground. If you're a defensive end, you hear coaches talking about setting a corner on the defense. And that's a defensive end basically not getting pushed back, not getting driven inside, not getting pushed outside. They're kind of holding an edge, maintaining a position, and forcing a running play that's going to the outside to bounce even farther outside. They're forcing a running play that's going inside. It has to stay inside and go right into the middle. You want those defensive ends to set that edge. You want your inside guys to tie up one or two blockers and not get pushed back into the linebackers.
Todd writes in, "Okay, now that the team has seemed to turn a corner, give us your take, Dr. Rob, on what you think the record will be the next 15 games, three this year and then next year's schedule. Also, what should their goals be for next year?"
Holy crap, that's a lot. I'd have to go game by game on the schedule. Let's just take this year. After what I saw in the Ohio State game, I think they beat Illinois, partly because Illinois is freaking horrible. But you got Michigan State at home. And I think this is a team that's found a little bit of a rhythm here. And Michigan State has just not had a lot of consistency. I think they're a very good team, and I think they're a very talented team. I think they're more talented than what Nebraska has right now. Maybe not at certain positions, but I think on the whole, I think Michigan State has a very good offensive line, a good defensive line, good linebacker, solid defensive backs. I think Michigan State lacks a game changer at quarterback. They just don't have that. But I think they've also been really inconsistent. And I think if they maintain even a little bit of the, it's kind of oxymoronic phraseology here, but if they can maintain that inconsistency, I think Nebraska beats Michigan State and Lincoln. Now, the other thing is that I think if Nebraska knocks off Illinois and beats Michigan State, you're going to see kind of a nice combination of a team that's been hitting on maybe all but one cylinder most of the year. You throw confidence into the mix, and that you know how everybody says winning cures everything?
It does, because you learn how to win.
It does. Confidence fixes a lot of mistakes. Well, a really confident team can make up for a lot. And I think if Nebraska beats Illinois, beats Michigan, and all of a sudden is looking at a 5-7 season if they can knock off Iowa, I think Iowa's going to have its hands full, and I think Nebraska beats them.
Well, that leads us into the question from Nick. Rob, I tweeted you about Iowa versus Nebraska records since 2002. Please shove this in Travis's face. Sorry, Trav, nothing personal, but you are an Iowa fan. Yes, I am.
Well, it is.
And Iowa's won 3 in a row in the series, Nick.
It is, and I remember the tweet. He makes a great comment where he says, and kind of the gist of his tweet was, hey, you've got all these Iowa fans saying, hey, all these Nebraska fans are living in the past. If you look at Nebraska's record since 2002, 2003, Nebraska's record and Iowa's record is almost identical. I mean, it's like 137.
But the difference is
in 82 versus 135 and 79.
But the difference is, and I said,
yeah,
this earlier,
Iowa's got the edge over the
last
few
years.
That's
not the difference in those games. The difference is over that 20 years were some of the losses and the embarrassing losses.
Yeah, there's been ugly ones.
Yes,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, and that, I think that's what maybe sets the two apart, is that Iowa didn't have any, maybe one or two ugly losses, but we can go through Nebraska's schedule starting with
whole Pelini era. You had two a year.
Yeah.
You had two of those. How the hell did Melvin Gordon still running? He's almost caught up to Marv Seiler.
Jeff just sent an email, and he said it's been confirmed. We got a tobacco wacky coach. Did it come out that Scott chews tobacco on the sidelines? I didn't see that. I mean, it's no secret. The guy's got a big dip in on television.
Sure. It sure looks like it, so...
I mean, if he doesn't, then he's got a big infection in his lip or something. I don't know what it is.
He should see a doctor about that.
Dr. Robin Travis, so is Spielman's new nickname Gator? Thanks. That's from Greg in Tulsa.
Gator? I don't get it.
Neither do I.
I'm not sure where it's coming from, but okay. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I don't get that either. Maybe. Did we miss something?
Might have.
I don't know.
I was hanging out with my in-laws. We were drinking beer, so.
Were you back from Guatemala by then? You were, weren't you?
I got back late Friday night.
Yeah, because I'm sitting there doing the Iowa game, and you're like, you have to go to the Iowa guy and go, hey, can you get me in a comedy club tonight?
Hook me up, dude. I didn't have Colleen's number.
Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy, huh?
You are. I live in your basement, for God's sakes.
Dr. Rob, this is from Ryan. Dr. Rob, do you think there's an elite pass rusher on the roster in the making or in the sites, in recruiting sites, that you think could make a difference on defense? Do you think an elite pass rusher like Randy Gregory is the biggest piece that Nebraska's missing on defense, or is it out defensive linemen getting even stronger in the weight room?
I think they need.
And Ryan's a 24-year-old Husker fan, so he's a youngin.
So I think there's a few things that, I mean, if you had a Randy Gregory type of guy who was one of those game-changing pass rushers, that's always a difference maker. And you look at from a comparison standpoint, you look at what Frost's staff had at Central Florida with Shaquem Griffin?
Shaquan, isn't it?
I think it's Shaquem Griffin. Okay. Anyway,
you had a
guy who was going to get sacks no matter what. He's going to get into the backfield and disrupt things. I'm thinking here.
I shot him a look like, dude, I'm reading more emails. You better pick this up.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a guy on the roster right now that fits that mold. Now, do you remember, you go back to, it was the first couple years Pelini was in Lincoln. Was it DeMario Williams? Who he kind of found a diamond in the rough and turned him into an NFL draft pick. That you just didn't see it coming. And maybe they... maybe they take somebody who's on the roster right now and do that with them. And I'm not sure I'm seeing it out of anybody quite yet, because even the guys that I'm looking at, you look at even like Ben Stille, who's a young guy who I think has a lot of upside, is more of those, he's kind of more of a hold the edge defensive end, almost an interior lineman type. He's not your classic pass rusher. This is a defense that uses the outside linebackers, the Luke Giffords, as your pass rushers. And I don't know if they've got a Randy Gregory type in that group at this point in time.
Jason writes in, says, did it look like the offensive line is actually improving, or is the Ohio State defensive line overrated? 184 yards rushing with at least half coming from rushes right up the middle. Thoughts?
Oh, I think they're improving. And I think they've done a pretty good job cleaning up some of the issues they've had. The holding issues, penalties in general. I think their run blocking has improved tremendously. I think the pass blocking has hugely improved over the course of the season. I think Greg Austin has worked absolute wonders with A, not the greatest talent on the planet, and I think he's worked wonders with a group that was poorly conditioned and very undercoached when he got them. I think they have. They've improved tremendously. Is this a great offensive line? No, but I mean, I think he's done a pretty good job of polishing a lump of coal here.
That means it's going to be a diamond, right?
Yeah, a little more pressure. Time and pressure, baby.
That is all the questions we got from the listener email. Of course, if you liked what Dr. Rob had to say, we answer, I would say, 90% of the emails, maybe 95% of the emails that come in. Some are just, you know, stupid questions, and we're not going to take those. And yes, there are stupid questions.
What? You never give me any of the stupid questions.
Well, because I'm your middleman. I screen these things. That's what I do. But if you do want to write in a question, feel free to do so at DocTalkSports@gmail.com. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com. As you've learned over the last couple of days, Dr. Rob, very active on Twitter. You like the Twitter, don't you? You interact.
Twitter's good. I don't like Facebook. I don't do the Instagram or Snapchat. I like Twitter. Couple sentences and done.
I'm reading this book by Gary Vaynerchuk, I think his last name is. But he says we should be doing like every social media platform there is. We should just be putting out content left and right. I'm like, I don't have time.
It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time, a lot of content. I'm never going to make it in the social media world because I can't do that. I want to thank Dave Remington of the Remington Trophy for being the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. I want to thank Infusion Brewing for Dean's Holiday Spiced Ale. Oh, good stuff.
Good beer.
I want to thank Ticket Express, TicketExpress.com, Husker Hounds, HuskerHounds.com, and, of course, Husker Max. I'm still kind of jet laggy from, it's not jet lag, but, man, I'm hurting from the daylight savings time.
I was in Guatemala. Back. They don't do it, so I'm already used to this time. So.
Man, I'm falling back. He's Dr. Rob Zadisk. I'm Travis Justice. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.